We're in the middle still of Mitzvah Kuf Samech Vav 166, which talks about the status of a woman immediately after childbirth. So I just wanted to elaborate a second, something not explicitly discussed by the Sefer Chinuch, but something very important to contemporary practice, which is when does the woman attain the status of becoming Tmeah? When she is giving birth. So we know that when the baby comes out, or at least when the forehead comes out, it talks about in Chazal, then she certainly becomes Tmeah because of Tumas Yoledes. But what about earlier in the process? Now, we have the Gemara in Shabbos talks about when you start being Mechalel Shabbos for a woman giving birth. We know that in Halacha, a woman giving birth has the status of a chola sheyesh basakana, that she's like an ill person who actually might die, Rachmana Litzlan, from this illness. It's not an illness, it's a natural process, but it's still considered a dangerous natural process and one that requires help and support. So if you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to help her do what she needs to do to give birth to the baby, also things that are called asuve daita, that just things that help her calm a little bit, calm down, then that is also considered you're allowed to do on Shabbos, even if it's Chilul Shabbos. It says that, let's say there is a blind woman, and she starts screaming that she needs a candle. Well, how is a candle going to help her? She can't see anyway, even if it's dark. So no, if she knows that a candle has been lit for her, so she's going to be more relaxed, and she's not going, tension is considered bad for the birthing process, so since she'll be more relaxed, then you light the candle for her, even though she's blind, that she knows that other people will be able to see and give her the proper treatment. You should ideally, if possible, if there's time, you should do a shinui. You should light the candle in an abnormal manner, anything that talks to you, that Yoledes. So you should try to do it in an abnormal manner, even though in a normal chola sheyesh ba sakana, there's a disagreement about whether you should try to do it things bishinui in an abnormal manner or not. Since the Yoledes is intrinsically a natural process, a woman giving birth, there's nothing. Every woman is, if she's zochet to do it, if she can, she's expected to do this at some point in her lifetime. So it's not a natural, it's not an abnormal thing. It's a natural process that everyone goes through. So therefore, we should try to, according to the way we assume, everybody agrees that we should try to make a shinui. You should try to do things in an abnormal manner for the woman giving birth. So, at what point is she considered to be a chola sheyesh ba sakana that you can start doing, even when necessary, malachos deraisa, biblical violations of Shabbos, without any shinui? If there is no time and you have to do it immediately, and there's no time to make a shinui, then you do it without a shinui. But at what point does she attain the status of chola sheyesh ba sakana? So the Gemara Masech Shabbos brings three indications, three different opinions. One is if she can no longer walk. So let's say, she walks only by you, she has one friend grabbing one arm, one friend grabbing the other arm, and they're helping her walk along, she can no longer walk by herself, then she is considered to be dangerously ill. And the Gemara there uses the language of psichas hakever, which means the opening of the uterus. So it's reminiscent of what we learned over here in Ilchos Tumas Yoledes, which is that we assume that any time that the uterus opens, at the very least, when it's opening because something's starting to come out, that's opening from the inside, that is considered to be the when you mechalel Shabbos for. One says when it's when the midwife puts her on the birthing stool, and another opinion is when the blood starts to flow. So any of these things that was considered to be psichas hakever, and the poskim assume that any one of these things would be considered to not only to render the woman a chola sheyesh ba sakana to the extent that you'd be mechal Shabbos for her, but that this would also make her be considered to be tumeah because of tumeas yoledes, because there's psichas hakever, even though the head of the baby hasn't necessarily come out yet. But we assume that the uterus is opened enough at this point that there's psichas hakever. Obviously, when the blood starts to flow, there's nothing to... When the blood from the birth starts to flow. Again, we talked about before, hamida raisa, blood from labor may be considered tahor, even though we don't assume that nowadays. But in any event, any one of these things, we consider the woman to be tameh as well as to be a yesh bo, a cholesh yesh bo sakana. So there, one, so the question is, when one of the indications is when the midwife would put her on the birthing stool. So, two women in here who have given birth. Midwife, did you use a birthing stool, either of you? No, you don't. For the most part, women nowadays do not use birthing stools. So the idea is not once they actually put you on the birthing stool, but when you would be put on the birthing stool, assuming you were giving birth with the attendance of a midwife 2,000 years ago. Now, one question that's come up is, Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses in a tshuva, so what happens nowadays, a lot of times, if you're giving birth in the, if a doctor, an obstetrician is attending your birth, assuming an obstetrician is attending your birth, so a lot, or a nurse, obstetrical nurses, so they will a lot of times put you in bed at some point during labor, which again may not be so good because a lot of times what a woman needs for pain relief or for to get the baby into just the right position to come out is a lot of times you need to move around a little bit. So that's not so good, but they, in any event, they put you in the they put you in bed at some certain times, a very early stage in labor. So the question is this considered to be nowadays Yosheva, they put you, if the midwife's putting you on the birthing stool because they're putting you in bed. So most poskim assume that that has nothing to do with anything. That this is, it would be at the stage of the process, which is much later on, you know, during real active labor, that that the midwife would put the woman on a birthing stool, and that would be the stage of the tummy. So when she's just lying in bed laboring, which again may or may not be the greatest idea, that is not, she is not considered to be tummy yet. Yeah.
Was there like any other question of? You know, if somebody is a cholesh yesh bo sakana, you ask a doctor. You know, that does not override, you know, whatever.
Yeah, if the doctor tells you that, oh, this is early in the process, there's some complication, there's something wrong.
Or you just ask, you know, or you say to the doctor, okay, at what point do you think there is a, you know, this.
Yeah, if you have reason to assume. I'm saying this is the. Right. That's true, but I mean, we're talking now also in terms of Nida, and not in terms of, in terms of when you're Michal Shabbos for her. But you're right, if the doctor says that she needs earlier, so then, okay, that's a different story. So what about other things? So what about, like, there are sometimes things in labor such as a bloody show, which is when the mucus plug comes out of the cervix and sometimes streaked with blood. So that also, we assume, is not the beginning of Nida because that's not uterine blood. If you know, if you can tell that this is the mucus plug, you know, the doctor or the nurse could tell you that this is mucus streaked with blood, so it obviously didn't come from inside the uterus, it came from, was what's plugging the cervix, so that is not considered to be the beginning of Nida, unless, you know, your cervix, the mucus plug comes out, and then more blood comes out after that with just blood, that's probably uterine blood, so that would be the beginning of Nida even earlier in the process. Or let's say the woman's water breaks, so amniotic fluid is not blood, it is clear, it is clearly not, has nothing to do with blood whatsoever under normal circumstances, so then it's clear. So that is considered to be also not, Rav Schechter writes in his notes to Rabbi Savlovsky's English book on Hilchos Nida, that the woman's water breaking is not considered to be the beginning of Nidos, unless that would not be a problem. Rabbi Schwartz is very funny, so he quotes that there are some poskim that recommend that for a woman that after her water breaks, so that's an indication that something is going on, even though the water breaking per se might not be the beginning of Nida, but the question is, do you have to assume that because the water is breaking, something's going on, things are coming out, you have to assume that maybe there's a little blood, you just didn't notice. So Rabbi Schwartz quotes Poskim will say that after the woman's water breaks, she can produce a clean bedika, an internal examination to determine when there's blood, then she's not a Nida, but otherwise she would be a Nida, but she would have to make a bedika before going on, touching her husband, etc. So Rabbi Schwartz says, this is crazy. I do not recommend inserting anything at this point in the process. There could be infections. There could be, that is nuts. He says the woman is, unless she sees blood, if the water breaks, she is tahor. We should not make a bedika, yeah?
Now, the practical implications of, you know, the how how late you can make this determination, how early it was. I guess touching the husband would be one thing,
Right.
But isn't also the question, though, is if it's approaching nightfall or something like that, you have to determine whether it's going to be what day the tumor starts. You mentioned there's
That's certainly true, of course. So that this would only be lachumra. Lakula, we would not assume that the tumor starts until you actually saw that the baby crowned. Or that you heard the baby cry, which would also be an indication that it's out somehow, it's not still inside. So if either of those two things happen, then the baby is considered to be born, even lekula. In other words, what we're talking about right now is, let's say it's Wednesday, and the woman's sees a little bit of blood, or she's the midwife sits her on the birthing stool. So then lechumra, you would be consider her to be tamei, but you wouldn't start counting the 7 or 14 days from now. You would start counting the 7 or 14 days from when the baby actually came out. Let's say this was late Wednesday afternoon, so the baby didn't crown until the beginning of Thursday evening. So then you would start counting the 7 days or 14 days from that point. But again, there's not too much difference for us nowadays regarding this, because anyway, we wait till the woman stops bleeding completely after giving birth, then we count 7 clean days, and it's going to be a much longer time anyway. But in the times of Chazal, it would be a much bigger issue. So then, of course, the husband and the wife are not supposed to touch. They have to adhere to the same set of restrictions as when the woman is having her period. So, this raises certain questions, such as, is it appropriate for the husband to be in the room while his wife is giving birth? So, in the olden days, certainly, giving birth, as you pointed out yesterday, giving birth was not considered to be a male-oriented activity in the slightest.
The man was supposed to be, standing outside in the waiting room, pacing up and down, with a pocket full of cigars. The old movies there, And they hold the baby up and, through the glass. That's,
Okay. But certainly 1,000 years ago, certainly even that point, then basically a woman would give birth. She would be in the attendance of her friends and midwife. She would not have, there would be no men around whatsoever, even the husband. But nowadays, there's more joint parenting. They like the husbands and wives are more of a unit. They want to be involved in every facet of their child's birth and raising together. Yeah.
Husbands are anxious to...
No, Rabbi Schwartz also mentioned that he remembers that one of the current Rebbeim in YU was in Kollel with him. So at one point, one day during Second Seder, the Rebbe left the Beis Medrash, which was very unusual for him. He was such a masmid, very unusual for him to leave the Beis Medrash. So they overheard that he went to call his wife and wish her mazel tov on having a baby. So and nowadays, the wife wants the husband to be with her during the birth. It calms her down, and that is part of the principle of asuve daita, that we try to do things even that we might not ordinarily want for strict halachic reasons, in order to calm the woman down. But there are problems that... during Nida, the husband is not supposed to gaze intently at parts of the woman's body that are normally covered. I mean, many opinions feel that it's fine if you just to glance at it or to see it inadvertently is okay. You're not supposed to gaze intently at parts of the woman's body that are normally covered, which is generally impossible. It's hard when your wife is giving birth and she's not going to have too many clothes on, and if you're in the room together, so that could create problems. But again, if your presence there is important for her, so then nowadays we generally assume that a husband should accompany his wife to the to give birth if that's her request, if she doesn't want you there. So, okay, that's I should listen to her with that as well. But during most of labor, she's not. It's only at the end when it starts getting really active that you assume that there's psicha sakever, that the uterus open, and then her nidasat status would start immediately. But there are also some women who are dilated a couple centimeters during, say, the entire 9th month of pregnancy or a few weeks before she delivers. So would that be considered to be psicha sakever, that the uterus is opening because the baby is about to come out? It's not even an external thing that's opening the cervix, say, from the outside. It's really internal pressure. So the poskim assume that this is not a problem, psichas akever. You see, it's like that for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, so it's not, the uterus is not getting ready to open. This is just the natural state of how it is for the ninth month. This is not to be considered psichas akever. Should not be concerned for this at all. Also, if a woman thinks she's in labor, but she might not necessarily really be in labor, let's say she has contractions, she goes to the hospital, maybe even, it's probably a very rare case, but let's say the midwife puts her on a birthing stool, and then all of a sudden everything stops. And she says, oh, it's time to go home. And then she has the baby a week later. So is that considered to be psichas akev, where she have to be considered to be Anita the entire time? Or only from now, or maybe you say, so we, no, we assume really that's not the case. We assume that if the woman is fine afterwards and she goes home and she goes for another long time without having the baby, then you show retroactively that she was not Anita, she was not, that was just false signs. She's fine during the time between the false labor and when she really gives birth. I was talking before, by the way, about the asuve daita, that importance of keeping a woman calm during labor, which Chazal talk about, which is actually borne out very much by modern science, because the hormone that starts labor is called oxytocin, which is a hormone that fosters feelings of love and contentment and bonding. So the idea is that if a woman is stressed out, so labor is going to, there are going to be other hormones that are going to work against the oxytocin, stress hormones that are going to work against the oxytocin, and labor is going to be arrested, and then who knows, she's going to need all sorts of interventions like artificial oxytocin to speed up the labor, or forceps delivery, things like that. She's going to need a lot of interventions, which she might not necessarily have needed. She could have just given birth completely naturally if she had been calm and relaxed the whole time, that the oxytocin could have just done its work. So it's important that the halacha very much recognizes the need for a woman to be calm and collected and cool during the time that she's in labor. And of course, what we don't want to happen, if it's medically necessary, it's medically necessary, but if labor is arrested and it's just not going, try to calm her down, first of all, which would be the first course of events, but it could result in a, again, if it's medically necessary, okay, but it could result in a C-section, which nowadays, if anybody's heard me talk about this, that the C-section rate in America is approximately 30%, which is absurd, and about 30%, which is absurd and ridiculous, and is caused largely by women's fears over certain things, or because of medical interventions which are unnecessary, and they themselves cause labor not to progress normally. In any event, sometimes a woman does require a C-section in order to give birth, and a C-section, interestingly enough, halakhically speaking, is not really considered birth. Only vaginal deliveries are considered in halakha to be really giving birth. So, if a woman, obviously
C-section,
it's...
C-section, she's not Anita?
Yeah, that's about to say. If a woman has a C-section and she does not experience any vaginal bleeding, then she is absolutely tahor. She is not considered to be a yoledes, she's not considered to be a zava, she's not even considered to be a nida, and she could go home, and she and her, as she's recovering from the C-section, she and her husband could have relations that very night. I'm sure that's exactly what she'll be wanting to do, as she's just cut open in her abdomen. Yeah.
If it's a boy, would it be a bechor?
No, if a firstborn male...
Wait, the bechor, but obviously we know for the purposes, for example, of, say, you know, a pidyon of ben, but what about Yerusha?
Yerusha not also.
Really? Wow.
I believe not, if not mistaken.
So in other words, essentially you have a situation where there is no bechor then.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Definitely considered to be your child, halakhically. It's not a shayla, but the question is, things that require actual birth are not...
So if the next one is a vaginal delivery, that doesn't count?
No.
Uh-huh.
So there's a machlokes tanoim, actually, in Bechoros.
Doesn't count as far as what?
Pidyon HaBen.
Being a... Oh, and what about Yerusha?
Also not.
Ah, yeah, you just don't have a Bechor.
Yeah.
Right, you just don't have a Bechor, right. It's actually a disagreement. Some of the tanoim, there are shitas in Maseches Bechoros, that the first baby is a C-section, and the second, and right afterwards, if she gives birth to another boy vaginally, then the second boy would be a bechor and wouldn't require a pidyon aben, but we don't paskin like that. So you see, vibak min ha-Torah minayin. That's a Torah source for the possibility that a woman could give birth vaginally after having a C-section, which again is a whole different, whole topic of discussion amongst medical caregivers nowadays. But practically speaking, nowadays, when a woman has a C-section, she's going to experience some sort of vaginal bleeding, so this generally would not be an issue that would come up. Practically, what would be the difference? She would not experience tumas yoledes. So therefore, let's say her C-section baby was a girl, and of course she's going to experience some sort of bleeding from the uterus vaginally, and she's going to become a nida. That's not a question. She's going to become a nida, but let's say she stops bleeding after 5 days, and then she can start counting the 7 clean days right after that, so she could go to the mikveh on the 12th day, because she's not tumas yoledes, she's only tumas nida, even though she gave birth to a girl, she does not have tumas yoledes, and she does not have to wait the full 14 days before going to the mikveh, yeah? So now continuing in the text of the Sefer HaChinuch, V'dine hasfekos hamischadshos lif'amim al hayoledes. So sometimes there will be doubts as to the woman's status. Kigon im tischayev leishev al tumas zachar or al tumas nekeva. So let's say sometimes she's not sure whether she gave birth to a boy or to a girl. So she has to keep both of them. Shepa'amim tistarech mitoch hasafek leishev lezachar ulenekeva v'gam lenida. So let's say she gives birth to a hermaphrodite. So then if she's not sure, we're not sure whether that's, I mean, it sort of has aspects of both being a boy and a girl. So therefore, we call in halacha an androgynous. And she would have to keep the halachas of both a male and a female. She would not have to keep nida because she for sure gave birth to something. Mm-hmm. So she would keep the male and female days, meaning that she would be tamei originally for 14 days. But then she would only have the clean days of a male. She would have the tummy days of a female and the tahor days of a male. So she'd be tummy for 14 days, but then the blood would only be considered to be tahor until the conclusion of the 40th day, and not, she wouldn't have all the way until the 80th day, like if she gave birth to, for sure, a female. And if she wasn't sure, so for example, something came out, but she wasn't sure if it's halachically considered to be a birth, then she would have to be concerned for the male days and the female days, and for Nida, that she did not give birth at all. So therefore, she would not be entitled to the Tahor days at all, because maybe she's a Nida, and she does not have any of the Tahor days, so she have to keep a minimum of 14 days, because maybe she gave birth to a girl, and then after that, once the 14 days are up, then you have no Tahor days whatsoever. Any bleeding thereafter would be considered to be tummy. But again, nowadays this doesn't really have much of an impact for us because of the fact that we treat any blood, including blood that was seen during the days there for sure, tar as being tummy, and she has to count 17 clean days following the conclusion of all that. It's interesting, though, by the way, that some poskim recommend, again, against this minhag, which we mentioned last time, that existed in certain communities, that a woman waited till the conclusion of the 40 days after a boy, or the conclusion of the 80 days after a girl, before going to the mikveh, which a lot of the poskim didn't like. Some poskim recommend that specifically the woman should go to the mikveh before the conclusion of the 40 or the 80 days. Why? Why could that be? Because she goes to the mikveh, and now she's still technically in her days there. The blood, at least on a Doraisa level, is for sure tahor. So, you know, she managed to count the 7 clean days. We don't know still exactly what's going on there. She might still be, she might not still be totally healed and all back to her normal self. So let's say the first time that she and her husband have relations after this time, so let's say she sees a little bit of blood, then she'll at least be less nervous because she knows that this blood is at least tahor on a d'oraisa level. So even though technically nowadays we would treat the blood during these days as tamei, at least, you know, during the first relation she might be if it were after this time, she might be all nervous. Oh, am I going to be irritated and I'm going to bleed and I'm going to during the middle of the intercourse, and then where my husband and I we're committing a sin because I'm anida and this is really bad. So instead, she should make sure that the first time that they have relations after the birth is during the clean day. So at least on a Doraisa level, they'll be less nervous, they're more relaxed, and on a Doraisa level, even if they do see blood during the time that they're having relations, then it would be tahor. So again, this is part of the requirement that women should try to be relaxed, because it could make things worse. If she's all tense, she's tightening up and she's still sensitive, then it could cause blood to be seen at that time. The Gemara asks, why does it need to tell you leishev lizachar ulinakeva v'gamla nida, that you need to sit for a male, a female, and also for nida? Seemingly, the male, saying male, is unnecessary.
Yeah, because the female time includes...
Right, because the female time includes the male, and if you're saying nida, that already indicates that she has no tahor days. So, seemingly, the male does not add anything. So, the Gemara answers that, what it does teach you is very interesting. The case is as follows. So, let's say a woman sees blood after, on the 34th day, right? On the 34th day after she gives birth. And after she gives birth to this thing that's a doubt as to whether she needs to sit for a male or a female or a nida. So she sees blood on the 34th day, so what are you going to tell me? That she's a nida because she doesn't get any tahor days, right? And it's after the 14 days for a girl, so she becomes a nida when she sees blood on the 34th day. So she becomes tame on the daraisa level for 7 days. So let's say she sees blood again on the 41st day. So what are you going to tell me? 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41. 7 days, right? So you're going to tell me that this is all part of the Nida period. Because she started on the 34th day, she continues to the 41st day. That makes sense. If she were totally a Nida, then she would have started her nidus on the 34th day, concluded it on the 31st day, even though she bled also on the 31st day. She determines that she stopped bleeding towards the end of that day, and she can go to the mikveh on the night following the 41st. Right? But, what? She, 34 days is still within the time period where you would be tahor midaraisa after giving birth to a boy, right? Because you're tahor for until the conclusion of the 40th day. So let's say she saw, if you just said, yeah, you're tahor before, but that's included in the time that you're for sure tahor up until the 40th day, right? So let's say she started bleeding on the 34th day, so you have two options. Either she just started nida, or she's still in the tahor days for the birth of a boy. So if she's still in the tahor days, then it's tahor. So, right? Then she's not the start of the nida. So then she continues bleeding until the 41st day. So if she were just nida, the 34th to the 44th to the 41st day would be all considered to be one nida period, and she could go to the mikveh immediately upon the conclusion of that.
Doesn't have to wait another 7 days.
I mean, daraisa. Oh. Yeah. So, but if we're worried that she did give birth to a boy, then the first blood from the 34th to the 40th day is going to be tahor, and the 41st day is going to be the beginning of nida, so then she has to wait another 7 days after that, because that's the beginning of nida, and she has to wait 7 days after. So that's the reason why it needs...
By 40 days after the birthday, don't know
what... It's not alive. If it was alive, kicking, screaming, boy, then you wouldn't have this doubt. This would be... Or even if it was a full-term stillbirth, Rachamel Atzlan. But in any event, so this is why it's important that the Mishnah told us in certain cases that she sits for a male and a female and a nida, because maybe she gave birth to a male, and during this time of then her blood is tahor, and she would have to start the nida period afterwards when she saw blood on the... she's a lot of different... Fine. But again, nowadays this is not really relevant, because we would wait till the... We would count 7 days following the conclusion of any blood, so we make things a lot easier. At least as far as figuring out status is concerned. V'din ha-mapeles k'min behema chaya ve'of madina. So let's say she gives birth after 40 days post-conception to a miscarriage that looks like... So something that looks like an animal. So something that looks like an animal and doesn't look like a human fetus, so it hasn't been formed yet, or it's some sort of deformity, which is probably what caused it to become miscarried. So in that case, she, according to the Oraisa law, even the Rabbanan law actually, then she would be tahor because it's only a human fetus, unless there was blood with it, which is a different story. Obviously, there would be blood with it. It should be tummy because of nida, but not because of tumas yoledes. She wouldn't have to wait the 14 days. So she would be only, it would only be an issue of nida. Because it has to have some features of a human fetus on a deraisa or a derabana level, to a real original derabana level, in order to qualify for tumas yoledes. But again, it's one of the cases where we make things easier for us nowadays, which is we say that a lot of the rishonim are right, that we're not expert anymore in determining exactly what the fetus looks like. So in any of these cases, the woman would be tamei for. We would be worried that this would have a status of yoledes, so the woman would be tamei for a minimum of 14 days. Even the Rabbanan, if she could become tahor, including the Shiva Nekiyim, including the 7 clean days, before the 14th day, she would have to wait to go to the mikvah until the night following the 14th day. If she has any type of miscarriage
what
after... No, there's no difference. If the woman, child dies during childbirth, then she's titumas yoledes vaday. It's not a suffix at all. Vim pneihem kifnei adam, oim pneihem kifnei adam, adina, if they have certain facial features that look like a human baby, then she would be considered to be a yoledes. Umapeles kamin yavchushin kamin saros. But if she has, again, this is an exception even nowadays, that if she just, it's like little flakes of flesh, like looks like little gnats, like the bug gnat,
yeah.
Or like hairs, things like very thin strands of something, then even nowadays that would not be considered to be, that she would have to be worried about tumas yoledes, and we'd only have to be worried that she was anida, assuming there was, it was accompanied with blood. So if these strands, let's say you put it on a piece of paper and you took the strand off and there'd be some red marks, that means there's blood present, and she would have to be worried about nida, but otherwise, if it was just strands, then that's not big enough to be considered to be opening of the uterus, that we have to be worried that there's blood, and we don't have to worry if there was blood actually present. I mean, and they also talk about all these sorts of tests that they used to do to these things, that they would put it in water to see if it would dissolve, to see if it was bloody, but in any event, all our schumers nowadays pretty much eliminate all these things. But if she just has dry strands that really have no blood present, then she would be tahor even nowadays. The amapel is the most adam sheishlo knafayim shel basar. It looks like a human fetus that has wings, like of fleshy type of wings, all these deformed type of fetuses. V'chein amapel is the most adam b'ayin achas v'yarech achas. If it only looks human with one eye and one thigh, but again, with different halachos than the original derabbanan level, but pretty much limited by our stringencies nowadays. V'amapelas zachar v'sandal imo. So let's say she has a miscarriage of a fetus that you can tell is a male, and the other fetus you can't tell. It's called a sandal, that it looks like deformed like a shoe. That's the impression. That's the idea that you get. That in that case, you're not sure whether the sandal was a male or a female. And you would have to be concerned for the days of Tumah, for a female should have to wait a minimum of 14 days before going to the mikvah. That's a sandal. And of course, if she gave birth to live, healthy twins, that's not a shaila. Live, healthy twins, if it's a boy and a girl together, then you would have to be concerned for the days of Tumah for a female as well. That's no chiddush. Or she gave birth to sextuplets, and five of them were boys, and one was a girl. She would also have to be concerned for the days of Tumah for a female baby. Although I don't think
they're usually C-section,
right? Yeah. So let's say a woman went on a trip and she was pregnant, and she came back and she was no longer pregnant. Okay, so let's figure out what went on over here. She can't remember exactly when she gave birth. So the Gemara has whole crazy cheshbonus over there, calculations of exactly that she should go to the mikvah on Exaday, and then again on Exaday, and then again on Exaday, because we have the concept of tvila bismana mitzvah, that a woman, it's a separate mitzvah for the woman, for a woman, anyone, a man or a woman, when they become tamei, to go to the mikvah at the proper time and not delay it. So the woman, in case she gave birth then, she should go to the mikvah on another day. But again, all these things are pretty much eliminated because we always wait until what is technically an improper time to go to the mikveh, because most of our women nowadays technically on a daraisa level. Again, after giving birth, certainly, but we wait till way after they could go to. It's really the time for tevila on a daraisa level. And even for a regular woman who has her period, we assume that technically on a daraisa level she's a nida, not a zava, so she could go to the mikveh after the conclusion of 7 days from the start of the period. But we have the chumra to wait shivanikim afterwards. That's not really the correct time. Although some people paskin, some rishonim paskin, that really it's a mitzvah incumbent upon them and to go to the mikveh at the correct time, even nowadays, I mean, in terms of immediately when the shivanikim conclude. We don't assume like that. We assume that if a woman has a legitimate reason to push off her immersion in the mikveh, then it's okay. There's a question also comes up with the yoledes, by the way, that a lot of times a woman is not going to make her hefsek tara after she gives birth. At the earliest possible moment, she could have made a hefsek. And even so, maybe she, once she makes the hefsek and she counts the shivanikim, she's still going to wait. She's just going to lie low now. She's not going to go to the mikveh immediately. She's going to go to her doctor, and her doctor's going to tell her at what time it's appropriate for her to resume relations. So she's going to wait to go to the mikveh until then, which is okay, by the way. It's a common misconception. Some posts can recommend that idea. That should be the case, but it's not the assumed opinion that a woman has to go to the mikveh immediately upon conclusion of the seven clean days. So let's say if a woman wants to count the seven clean days, and then because she thinks she has, for some reason, let's say this woman has completed her seven clean days and now, but she's going to wait to go to the mikveh. So the question is, can she go to the mikveh for that first time after giving birth on a Friday night? Because she could have gone earlier. So in general, we find leniencies about these things, because most poskim feel that a person is always allowed to use the mikveh on Shabbos, on Friday night, Shabbos day, whatever. There are no restrictions whatsoever. So in general, we do try to find leniencies, although it would be more proper, at least, at the very least, to delay her hefsek until the Friday before she wants to go to the mikveh, so then really she doesn't set out, even though she could, in theory, before, she doesn't set out to start counting the seven clean days until the time that they would conclude exactly on the day when she would be wanting to go to the mikveh, meaning the Friday night. The issue of swimming, in most cases, the issue of swimming in cold water bathing oneself in cold water is only a problem of a minag. That even midrabanan, except in cases, there's a gzera that maybe if you swim in like a river or something like that, then you're going to make a life preserver. In order not to make a life preserver, so Chazal asked us from going swimming in such a situation on Shabbos. But in an enclosed pool, may only be because of a minag that Rishonim bring down, that we have a minag not to immerse ourselves completely, wash our whole bodies in cold, even in cold water on Shabbos, which is something that's even mutter according to the strict Talmudic law. So, but for the tzorech mitzvah, for immersing oneself in a mikveh, there was never this minag.
And for Chashisha men on Shabbos, it's a mitzvah?
They might tell you so. Strictly speaking, it's mutter for a man, let's say, he wants to observe what we call Takanas Ezra, to immerse himself in the mikveh after having a seminal emission. So technically speaking, that would be permissible on, let's say, they had relations on Friday night, which is a normal situation. So then on Shabbos morning, before davening, so he wants to immerse himself in a cold mikveh, that technically in halacha is okay. Some people recommend that they should not do that. It's better to delay the immersion until Motzei Shabbos. The Nagon is purported as saying this because he was worried that it'd be very difficult to restrain oneself or from squeezing out one's hair, which may be an Issur Derabanan on Shabbos to squeeze out your hair. Like, you know, you're not allowed to squeeze fruits, you're not allowed to squeeze towels, things like that. So squeezing one's hair might also be an Issur Derabanan. There are Rishonim that it's completely mutter to squeeze hair on Shabbos, but we generally assume that it would be a problem, at least
on
their abundant.
They don't have any hair.
Right, squeeze beard. Fine. Any hair would be a problem. Any hair that's closely packed together. Certain body parts would not that maybe have hair on them, but they wouldn't be closely spaced enough to consider it to constitute a problem of schita, of squeezing out the hair. But in any case, technically speaking, a man is definitely, if he has a good reason, then he's allowed to go to the mikvah on Shabbos.
Are you allowed?
No, because we try to avoid it. We do it when there's a reason, a mitzvah reason for it, so you do it.
Like if they go to mikvah every
morning. Right, so then there is a practice, a chassidish practice, that either they go to the mikvah every day before davening, because or specifically on Shabbos, because of tosefes kedusha. They want to add holiness to themselves by immersing themselves in the mikvah, even though there's not a real halachic reason for doing so. So chassidish poskim will tell you this is also a, you know, it's only a minhag, not to refrain from washing oneself, so at least in the mikvah, so there's a little bit of some sort of mitzvah. Other poskim say if you're not going to the mikvah for a halachic reason, it's really not proper to go to the mikvah on Shabbos at all. Either a woman, because she's trying to remove Tumas Nida or Tumas Yoledes from herself, or a man, because he's trying to remove Tumas Keri. And even that, of a seminal omission, but even that, like I said, some posts can feel that in that case, it's better to not to go to the mikvah on Shabbos. The only case that we would permit it would be for a woman, I mean, in the times of Beis HaMikdash, if you really needed to go to the mikvah to become Tahor, then obviously you'd be able to do that too. But the only time the only time we would permit it nowadays is for a woman who's has the real halakhic obligation to go to the mikvah. But the real problem is when the mikvah is hot.
Mm-hmm.
That is the issue.
Yeah.
The cold mikvah we could find heterim for, but when the mikvah is hot, there is very serious problems with that for the chassidish man going to
and
the mikvah, hot mikvah on Shabbos morning.
You know, in the winter and our climates, there's nobody going to get into a mikvah that's not heated.
Usually, if you go to a big enough mikvah, if you go to a large mikvah like in the chassidish area, Borough Park or Bnei Brak, something like that, you'll have your choice of pools. There's the cold mikvah, the warm mikvah, not mikvah. Because you're not on Shabbos, we're not allowed to bathe our entire body in hot water, even if it was heated from before Shabbos, because they used to have issues. In the times of Chazal, they would have bathhouses, and people go to the bathhouse on Shabbos. What's the problem? I'm allowed to go to the bathhouse. And the bathhouse attendants were actually heating the water on Shabbos, which is Issur D'oraisa, obviously. And they were saying, no, it was heated before Shabbos, so we just kept the fire has been burning since before Shabbos, it's been heating the water, there's no problem for you to go to this water. So for that reason, Chazal forbade us from washing ourselves in hot water, even if it was heated from before Shabbos. You can wash your hands if you want, if you have an urn or something like that with hot water, you could use that to wash your face or something
right,
like that.
Well,
but you can't wash.
To the mikvah, it's a big urn, that's all, you know.
No, you're allowed to wash part of your body, not to wash your whole body, from an urn.
So in other words, wait a second. So in other words, it's the...
Because the bathhouse attendants were saying, we heated this water up before Shabbos. Right, but they really heated it up on Shabbos. So now we're not allowed. So that's a major problem, the hot mikvah. Some say, since that's also, they're not really washing themselves, they're only going for tzorech mitzvah, so then they just go in and quickly and then come out. They're not really watered. They don't have intention of washing themselves in that water.
So the water can be cold, is that fair? So.
Right, these are all not...
Okay.
The Yeser Rubei Apratim Binyani Tumasa, there are a lot of details, as I think you've gathered by now from this shir. A lot of details about the halachos of a woman who's giving birth. Hakol b'maseches nida, it's all found in Tractate Nida. Binyan dinei karbanam mefuzarim b'arba maseches, as we'll see in two mitzvahs from now. The woman has to bring a korban when she becomes tahor from her birth. So that's those are found in many different tractates. So mehen harbe bezvachim v'arachin v'krisos v'kinin munigayim. These different tractates. But I guess mitzvah zol b'chol makon v'chol zman linyan sheyol yodos tamos. This is applicable in all places in all times, even if we don't have tuma and tara per se in terms of touching things. We have the rule that a woman who's yoledes is not allowed to be with her husband until she immerses herself in the mikvah. The over avar leha b'meizid b'soch hazman ha-mugbal le'isur o afil achar hazman ha-mugbal kol zman shelo tov lo bitel ha-sei zeh. So the mitzvah we had over here was a mitzvah saseh, right? So mitzvah saseh, you think the punishments are not so severe. So you might think, I'm willing to have the sin. When my wife has just given birth, she hasn't gone to the mikveh yet, I'm willing to have this in. So that's not accurate. The gam avar alav, you have a negative commandment also. Kimo benidoch in yeshikasuv kimei nidas tevosa titma. So the Torah, there's no explicit negative commandment in terms of the yoledes, but the Torah tells us that when a woman gives birth, so her status is the same as a nida. So if her status is the same as Anita, then if you have relations with her and she has relations with you, we're both chayev garis. B'shogeg chayev la bichatos kvoy b'zman habayis. And if it was accidentally, then you have to bring a korban chatas, the same as a nida. So this the prohibition, the level of prohibition, the korban that your chayav karis is exactly the same for a yoledes, for a woman who just given birth, as for a nida. And this, as the Zeir Bruchin pointed out, the status continues even if she didn't go to the mikvah immediately on the night of the 8th or the 15th after she gave birth to a boy or a girl. The status continues until she immerses herself in the mikvah, even if it takes her a longer time to get around to that.